Welcome to the program. Sam Rujofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And before we talk about all this electoral college stuff, let's I need one music to die down a little bit because we got to talk about Pearl Harbor. 75 years ago, the attack began at 7:55 a.m. It was a Sunday. Japanese specifically chose a Sunday. You know that. They knew that we as Americans, that we observe Sunday as a day of rest. And it anticipated, correctly, that service members would be on even lower alert than they were normally. If you've been to Hawaii, you know that there is something in the air that makes you very relaxed. So imagine we were not on a war footing. No one was expecting this. Japanese diplomats were busy, actually, in Washington, D.C. You might realize it's the enormous time difference. We're 3 hours ahead here, but Washington, D.C. would have been 6 hours ahead from Hawaii. So there it was. Well, it was, you know, it was middle of the day, and they were actually in the process of negotiating some particular items that were being contended, right, between our governments. And in the middle of all that, the Japanese launched their attack. That was one hell of a daring attack. You got to hand it to them. They basically caught us with our pants down, and it wasn't pretty. Attack lasted 110 minutes. Think about that. I mean, must have seemed like an eternity, but it was relatively quick. There were two waves, about 45 minutes apart. 2,335 U.S. servicemen were killed. Over 1,000 were injured. 68 civilians died, and 35 were wounded. 8 U.S. battleships sunk or were damaged heavily. But the most interesting thing, right, you know, the target, you know what the Japanese were after in this whole thing? They were after our aircraft carriers. That was the prize of prizes. And it just so happened that our aircraft carriers were all out on maneuvers. They're gone. They're out. And so the Japanese actually considered, almost in the aftermath, considered the attack not a success. They didn't get what they were after and very quickly realized that they had awoken a sleeping giant. History, of course, the attack on Pearl Harbor invigorated the U.S. Congress to awake. And in fact, to put itself on war footing, a war was declared on the Axis, which included Germany and Japan. And it was a war that the U.S. ultimately won. Decisive victory. In part due to bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the first and only nuclear bombs dropped on anyone, anywhere. And now there's a whole conversation, if you don't know, about who needs to apologize for what. Because there was a historic visit that occurred in May, I believe, where Obama went to Hiroshima. Do you know this? Obama visited Hiroshima. And he gave a long speech there that was a sort of a non-apology apology. And now there is talk. Apparently, it's been confirmed that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan is going to be the first Japanese prime minister to visit Pearl Harbor. And that's going to happen at the end of this month. And there's this talk about him apologizing. And I actually have heard a few very sensible people tell me, yeah, you know, I think you really ought to apologize. And it dug the crevices of my memory. It triggered it. It tickled me a little bit. I had to go back and remind myself. Do you remember WikiLeaks now has become almost a household name. But back before WikiLeaks was really that big of a thing, this is way back when. This is before Snowden. In 2009, WikiLeaks released some cables. Do you remember this? Yeah, they had intercepted, hacked, whatever it was, some cables that were going back and forth. Was this part of what Manning had provided them? I think it might have been. But at any rate, they found this cable and published it. And the publication I found it in was the Japan Times through the Kyoto News Agency. These were cables that were going back and forth negotiating Obama's visit in 2009 to Japan. And the most interesting thing of this was that the Japanese were practically begging him on their knees, so to speak, to not apologize and not to visit Hiroshima. Now, you might scratch your heads and go, Sam, come on, that can't be true. Well, you got to understand the backdrop of this. Obama was on a world apology tour at the time. The man was basically walking around wearing a hair shirt, visiting all of our sworn enemies, and bowing down to everybody and telling everybody how sorry he was for what a horrible, awful country we were. And if your liberal panties are all twisted up, let me remind you of a few instances. This, by the way, all goes back to 2009. He visited Strasbourg, France. Who compiled this list, by the way? I've got a list here that's compiled by the, looks like heritage.org. And they're credible. So they've got they've got a list, but these are the ones that I remember that stuck out in my mind at the time. And I think just to give you some background here. So in 2009, Obama goes to France and do you remember his Berlin trip, by the way, when he was still campaigning? Everybody's all been out of shape about Trump. Trump's not the president yet. He's just a president-elect. We just sit down and let Obama be president. Well, Obama campaigned in Europe, that little guy. Where were the liberals then? Complaining about that. Remember when he went to Berlin and he had this messianic welcome? There were, I don't know, a million people in the streets. And everybody said, that's it. He's going to win. And then Trump had rallies where people were lined up around the corner. Oh, no, that's not a sign of anything. But anyway, so he went back to Europe. He went back into the friendliest territory. This is the same Europe. They gave him the Peace Prize for doing nothing. And there he went. And he said what? Most notably, he said, instead of celebrating your dynamic union, talking about, you know, us and the European Union, and seeking a partner with you to meet common challenges, there have been times where America has shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive. Okay, now, that's just one. I mean, he went to France and he said that we were bad people. There were times when we were bad. Well, then he goes on also in 2009 to Al Arabiya and began trash talking us to the Muslim world. He said, we sometimes make mistakes. We have not been perfect. Okay, and then what else? Oh, G20 summit. That's the great one when you meet other world leaders. You think that Arafat, you know, would, or, you know, I don't know, Putin shows up and says, I'm really sorry. You know, we were kind of crappy 5 years ago as a country. Here's what he said. This was great. I would like to think that with my election and the early decisions that we've made, that you're starting to see some restoration of America's standing in the world. Arrogant. Now, we're talking about this. The Obama apology tour then preceded Japan practically begging him not to come to Hiroshima and apologize. And then my last one that I remembered here, he went to the Turkish parliament. Now, if you know an Armenian, and believe me, if you're in Southern California, you know one or two Armenians, you know that the Turkish government has on its hands the blood of Armenians to the tune of millions and millions. Okay? In other words, we talk about Hitler's Germany. You don't talk about how bad what Turkey did to the Armenians. The Armenian genocide, one of the great horrible things done in the 20th century. And here is what Obama says to Turkey. The United States is still working through some of our own darker periods in our history. Huh? He was making a reference. He was saying, hey, well, you know, I know you guys had a little problem, you know, when you killed a few million Armenians, you know, sorry about that, you know, but we too are working with some of our problems, you know, like, I don't know, Jim Crow. Come on. Mind you, this all from the man who's being praised as an example. I mean, this guy is Obama. Oh, look at this amateur Trump, this amateur goofball, crude, you know, Biff-like character Trump who's filling these huge shoes left by Obama. Yeah, right. So anyway, against all this backdrop, Obama plans to visit Japan. He's planning a visit. He was planning a visit sometime in 2009. And that's where this cable came from, where Japan goes, please don't. In fact, let me dig out the exact wording so you believe me. I'm not making this up. They actually called President Obama visiting to apologize for the atomic bombing during World War II a non-starter. That was a direct quote from the cable that was intercepted. All right, now, since today's 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, and since the Japanese Prime Minister is visiting Pearl Harbor in a few weeks, and since also he has specifically said he won't apologize and there's all this rancor about it, I want to tell you this is exactly it. So Obama goes in May and he doesn't really apologize. He goes there and he talks about peace and everything, but they don't even want to hear that. And I'll tell you why, because it's an interesting thing. I don't think people realize this. For one, you know, it's 75 years ago, and both countries suffered tremendously in the conflict. It was a horrible war. And Japan, by the way, the terms of the surrender, I don't think you realize this, but we disarmed them. I mean, Japan had, at the start of World War II, was one of the great naval superpowers of the world. And so it should be, because it was in the middle of the ocean. And I mean, it was a tiny little country with a disproportionate amount of military firepower. Now, what after the war, what happened? Well, we actually decreed that they could not remilitarize. They were only allowed to have a very small military. And this small military, by the way, they call it the Japan Self-Defense Forces. They cannot even call it the Japanese Army. They have to call it the Japanese Self-Defense Forces. Now, the world has changed a little bit since the end of World War II, has it not? You notice that there is a new big dog in town, a.k.a. China. You know, those people pissed off that Trump made that phone call to Taiwan. And they are slowly creeping and taking over territory in the South China Sea. And they're getting close to Japan. And if you were in Japan, you'd be a little nervous about this guy over here. You know, that China guy with his big military missiles up in the air, nuclear weapons, everything, the whole nine yards. And you'd be thinking, you know, I mean, what's really stopping China from scooping us up? And better yet, the question is, would America defend us? Because that's part of our treaty, right? That's part of our obligation. Japan, you can't build an army, but in turn, we have to protect you. But would America step up? And the America under Obama, and certainly an America under Hillary Clinton, that question is not necessarily easily answered. And so the last thing that the Japanese want to do is to draw any attention to this past conflict, to their own egregious conduct in Korea, in China, in Singapore. I mean, they don't want to go on an apology tour. They want to recognize the dead. They want to honor the fallen. They want to honor the memory. They don't want war, by the way. And this is how I know this is true. If you look at what Shinzo Abe is saying in Japan, everything he's saying is, I honor the dead. I'm here. I want to go to Pearl Harbor, honor the fallen, And I want to underline and emphasize the horrors of war. And the world today is the one where Japan and Taiwan fear China and recognize China as the greatest single threat, both existentially and really, to their existence and continued prosperity. First and foremost, prosperity. You need security. And that security is tough to find in Asia. I'm telling you, it's something we do not realize. We're very safe here in our giant country. But just as Pearl Harbor and Hawaii were vulnerable on that day in 1941, so too now is Taiwan and Japan vulnerable to the great threat of China. And that is why, I'll tell you this, that phone call, that little jab and stick at China reminding them that we don't care what they think, was exactly the right move for Trump to make. All right, back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
The holidays are here. The roads are busy and drivers are crazy. If involved in an accident, go to sweetjames.com.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. So, rules to live by. You don't go on this is the thing. You don't go on apology tours abroad. You know, it's kind of like, he's talking about this Obama thing, where you remember that he just couldn't help himself. When he this is the difference between him and Trump, where Trump's just not apologetic about anything. It's just, this is who we are. We're a great country and we're, you know, F you. But it's like, do you remember, I don't know, did anybody ever give you that kind of relationship advice or marriage advice ever? Did you ever... It's like you don't criticize your spouse, you know, in front of other people or to other people. And it was like one of the first things somebody told me when I was getting married. And they said, you know, just you know, don't do it. And it kind of is the same thing here. You know, when we've got a U.S., our president, our guy, right? And he's abroad. And in many cases, in countries that are hostile to us, and he's criticizing us, criticizing our country and things that we've done, it doesn't wear well. And that I think rubbed a lot of people the wrong way in the moment. And now I think this answers the question about the Japanese prime minister who's going to visit Pearl Harbor at the end of the month. No. I mean, I don't think he should apologize. Japan has already prostrated itself completely. I mean, the unconditional surrender, we humiliated them. Remember President MacArthur? I mean, General MacArthur, he stood side by side with the Japanese emperor. I mean, by the way, you know, the Japanese at that time considered the emperor to be basically God. I mean, it was a very humiliating thing. We nuked two of their cities. Bygones be bygones, but it is a nice thing to do. You know, I want to digress to something here. Tomorrow night. Well, we're off the air because of the King. So, and it's perfect timing because I have my company's Christmas party coming up. Have you had yours yet? It is. It alternates between a fun evening, and probably the worst night of the year. Yes. No, it does. And you know why? Okay, if you haven't had your party, I'm going to give you some advice. Yeah, No. That's not, you don't do that. You don't see, okay, well, what Robbie's thinking here is is you pregame. No. Exactly the opposite of what producer Robbie just said. You've got to not drink very much. That's the first rule of thumb on company Christmas parties. How do I do this without? Let me think about this. So every every Christmas party and every company party, because we usually do a summer party and then we do a Christmas holiday, you know, party. Every time we have a company-wide event, we always have an open bar. People like that. But some people like it a little too much. And almost every party that I can think of has ended up with someone getting terminated that following week. And I'm not the Grinch. I'm not a bad person. They just do something that is unacceptable. For example, I don't know. Let's say they grope somebody, you know? They make a pass at somebody. Now it's awkward. Now it's sexual harassment. Now it's a liability. Now it's a problem I have to deal with. So here's a pro tip for you this holiday season. Look, your employer, they just want you to have a good time. They just go and have fun, but don't have too much fun. If you want to have a fun night, have a glass or two of wine at your company party or a highball. And then after the leave early, by the way, you'd never want to be the last man standing when it comes to a holiday party. You want to leave early and then go with a few friends from work and then go do your thing somewhere else. Have a great night. You already got a babysitter, right? So you've got a sitter. You're away from the kids. Just because I have so many war stories and some of them are just too fresh to share. But yeah, the last party, I had to cart some girl who was so drunk she couldn't even stand. And I had to get her into a car with a coworker. The whole time she was protesting. She goes, I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't want to go with him. I don't want to. All right. Back with this Electoral College stuff. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790. Gary Garrison with the news next. Maybe Trump is just toying with Romney as a cat would with a little mouse. And if that in fact is the case, well, deservedly so.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
And the denial of the left and the never Trumpers continues. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And, well, looky here. Do you remember? I don't want to go too far back, but remember the primary? Yeah, so what did you hear from everyone and their pet poodle? What did you hear? There's just no way Trump can make it. There's just no way I remember this as a guy who thought, hey, this, he can make it. He can go all the way. And you would have thought I was a flat earther the way I was treated among the salons, in the salon elites of the political thinking world. Okay. So then Trump, of course, you know, gets the nomination. Remember? Indiana, just, you know, all of a sudden, just the opposition to Trump crumbled, and he clearly had enough votes to make it happen. And then do you know what happened? Do you remember then the next Never Trump movement? Do you remember what the next great consternation and hope and expressions of what was going to derail Trump would be? Do you remember this? Well, it was all about the convention. That's right. Yes, Trump was going to go to the convention and he was going to be denied because those good people there on the floor of the convention, they were going to stand. There was going to be an uprising. And Kasich, I mean, it was even back then that Kasich was being floated as a potential backup. And I'm telling you this because I was there. I remember it. I was walking around and there are still people, you know, this Trump guy. And, you know, maybe tomorrow's the big day. They're going to be voting. You could feel it. I mean, it was And I would remember actually at one point I'm walking right outside of the barricade because they barricaded those walls in. You know, that it was a very secure perimeter. And there's a bunch of kind of gross dive bar establishments. And I remember I saw Crystal, right? What's his name? Billy Crystal? No, that's right. I always get the two. William Crystal? No. Yeah, from the Weekly Standard. And he's the leader. He was the grand poobah of the Never Trump movement on the conservative and Republican side. And he was meeting with a small group of people, and they're plotting. You know, the talk among the media was there. Plus, it's going to happen. Trump's going to get derailed. It's never going to. The Republicans will never let him get through. So then, really, kind of anticlimactically, Trump ends up getting the nomination officially. Delegates all vote for him, seal the deal. And then, of course, there is no way he is going to get 270 votes. And we spent the next rest of the season talking about how there's just no way that Trump is going to get elected. And look at the polls. Well, and then came the great day of reckoning for CNN, where you and I watched CNN and them all in tears. I'm just bringing all this up because it's so entertaining. When people talk about Trump getting derailed by the Electoral College and that there's going to be a revolt, it is wishful thinking. It is the silliest, stupidest, most unfortunate. I mean, I hope the Never Trumpers have visited with a shaman. They would be best advised to go hit up a veterinary faith healer to get them through this. No. It's that absurd. Because the math, and I'm going to get into it more after the break, but the math is really simple. So then he wins the presidency, and he didn't. I don't want to hear about the 2 million votes in the popular election vote. You know, I don't want to talk about that because it comes down to the electoral votes. It comes down to math. What's the math? 306 for Trump. I talk about this all the time. 232 for Clinton. So in order for Clinton to get up to 270 votes. She needs to get 38 people to switch their votes from Trump to Clinton. And here's the reality. She's not going to get any people to switch from Trump to Clinton. They may be switching from Trump to someone else. And so let me tell you how that process will play out when we come back. Okay? Short break, and then we'll be right back here. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is James Bergener, reminding you to drive safely this holiday season. If hurt, go to sweetjames.com.
Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Of all the weird things that people do, people in Scotland do, apparently, keeping strange exotic pets is high atop the list. That's right. The men in plaid, a.k.a. the Scots, keep a wide variety of exotic pets. I don't know why, but apparently this also is causing a number of extra visits, perhaps unwarranted visits, needless visits to the emergency room. Yes, that's right, including most recently some Scot that was attacked by his own angry monkey. This reminds me of my trip to Barbados. Remember I told you about those monkeys that got a little out of hand at the hotel, went to attack that tourist from California? Well, anyway, it happened in Scotland. And there is no word if the monkey was wearing a kilt. Now, I don't know, if you get attacked by a monkey, You don't want to fuss with the monkey. You don't want to fuss with the owner's insurance. You don't want to fuss with any of that. You got to make one call to the guy that we trust, the only attorney we trust, and his name is... That's right. Sweet James Bergener. That's right. He is the lawyer that we trust on this program and hope that, well, we want you to trust him too. And you will. Give him a call. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. And any, you know, car accident, motorcycle accident, boating accident, slip and fall, dog bite, monkey bite, you know, whatever it is, call Sweet James first. Don't talk to the insurance company, anybody like that. Just call Sweet James, 800-881-2021, or go to his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And talking about this news story here that's developing about the Electoral College and how it might be the Great Wall of China that stops Mr. Trump from becoming the 45th president of the United States. Yes, that's right. The Great Wall of China, just as it repelled Genghis Khan, as we're hoping will repeal Genghis Trump. Now, this is not going to happen. This is a total liberal and never Trump fantasy. Now, I have to distinguish between the two groups because they make for very strange bedfellows. What do I mean? I'll tell you. You know, you've heard about this clown in Texas. He's a paramedic. Normally, I love firefighters, police, and paramedics. You know we do here on the program. We really do. So I mean no disparagement to anyone in this fine profession, but there is one person among you who is a total unadulterated moron. It's Chris Suprin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It doesn't even matter. He will be yesterday's news tomorrow. Why I will not cast my electoral vote for Donald Trump, he writes this op-ed piece in the New York Times. By the way, I'm not even going to get into it. The silly stuff he says in here is enough to make honestly, anybody with a brain would cry reading this. It's so stupid. But the best part about it is, you know who represents him? You know he's picked up a PR firm? When I talk about strange bedfellows, he's got a PR firm. Yeah, Megaphone Strategies. And who owns this? Who started this firm? Ah, our friend Van Jones. That's right, the Sam Van Jones that is claiming that this was a whitewash. Remember that? Election night? Yeah, and he cried, and oh my gosh. Yeah, so he's representing a number, he claims, a number of Republican electors who aren't voting for Trump, including this Chris Suprin guy. And so I'm going to throw this out here. What a strange world where we have Republicans, right? In order to be an elector, by the way, you've got to prove yourself to the Republican machine in the state that you're in. You have to be a Republican through and through to be a Republican elector. So what a strange world that you have someone like that who ends up hiring and be brought in and helped and supported by none other than crazy Van Jones, the same guy who denied. By the way, he's a 9/11 conspiracy theorist. He's somebody that's actually denied and questioned that our country's, our government's involvement in 9/11, which I would think would be deeply, deeply offensive to somebody like Chris Suprin, because as a 9/11 responder himself, he was a firefighter or paramedic at the time, responded to the World Trade Center after the attack, and has founded a 9/11 group of all things. I'm telling you, and he's getting in bed with this Van Jones character. This is going nowhere, folks. Nowhere fast. It's a total joke, a farce. Nothing, nada, no way, no how. Give it up! All right, back after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. The oil down the desert way. This is America, bitches! I'm sorry! Get a grip! Deal with it! You're in our house, but you've got to know the difference between tolerance and capitulation.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
All right, we're back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And one little end note here on this Electoral College bit. You know, there's talk about these Republican, you know, this one guy that wrote this piece in the New York Times, how he's not going to vote for Trump. He's a Republican. And then we've this news of Van Jones representing a number of Republican electors, which sounds like a lot of hot air to me. But then there's a larger group of Democrats. All these news stories cite these Democratic electors who are going to raise you know, Kane and try to, you know, to persuade their Republican electors to you know, not vote for Trump. I mean, come on, put your brain hat on for a second, okay? It doesn't have to be your Trump hat, just your brain hat. You go in there. I don't know what it looks like, a little convention center room, whatever. You go into the Electoral College room. And you think the Republicans are going to listen to some Hillary Clinton supporters tell them not to vote for Trump? After Trump has picked General Mattis to be his defense secretary? After Trump, by the way, just pulling this out here, not going to spend a lot of time on it, but Trump picked Scott Pruitt, climate change dissenter, to lead EPA. Now, that might have the Democrats having the fainting spells over this. But I guarantee you the Republican electors in the room are going, yeah, 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 finally, somebody there. I mean, one of the worst bit of news about the EPA is that they're getting a guy headed who might actually do a lot of harm to the EPA. That's like music to Republicans' ears. So you're telling me in this group of this room, you know, there's going to be all these Democrats that are going to persuade the Republicans to switch their vote away from Trump. It's not going to happen. And then finally, if they switch their vote from Trump, they're not going to be switching their vote to Clinton, which means Clinton's not going to steal 38 votes. She might get 38 votes away from Trump, in which case Trump wouldn't have what? The 270 that he needs. But at that point, who decides who the president is? Oh, wait a second. Oh, yeah, that's right. Congress. Who was that? Yes. Republicans. And they're not going to vote against Trump. The first thing Trump did was put Rance Priebus in. Oh, who was he? Right? The head of the Republican Party. Priebus is going to make sure this is all in line. 100%. This is a guy who worked to elect all those schmoes that are in Congress. Not going to happen. No way, no how. And so I'm telling you, this thing is just a load of crock. So just let the libs have their fun with this. You know, play along. You know, when people at the water cooler are telling you, oh, you know, Trump really could lose this. This could be the first time in our nation's history. Just smile and nod. You know, like when you talk to a crazy relative at a Christmas party or something. Now, speaking of Christmas, I sometimes love to, this is not even political. So now this is just a little. This is a little palate cleanser, maybe an unfortunate choice of words. So this kid goes to see Santa Claus. And, you know, this was like bad Santa, okay? Because Santa was having a really bad day. The kid sits on Santa's lap. And this is a tape of what happened. This is a news report about this particular incident. And it starts with the news reporter reporting on what happened, and then you'll hear from the kid's mom, and then you're gonna hear from the kid himself. And I'm just gonna tell you right now, skip to the chase. I saw the kid on the video. The kid is overweight. Fat kid, alert. Play the tape, Robbie.
Anthony asked for an iPod Touch and a drone for Christmas when the family says he was body shamed.
Very rude. I've never seen anything like it.
And when I got done, he said, just lay off the hamburgers and french fries, and that really just disrespected me, and I felt awful.
Okay. So there it is. Santa told the kid to lay off the hamburgers and french fries. Look, here's the thing. It's the mom's fault. It's sad laughing at the kid. It's the mom. What are you doing to this kid? This is child abuse. What about giving the kid a bag of carrots? Because I do not buy this argument that this poor 10-year-old or 12-year-old kid has an out-of-control thyroid. Okay? It's his diet, dummy. So, mom, before you're complaining about how inhumane and horrible Santa is, maybe you should put on your big boy pants and take it for what it is. Besides, maybe Santa didn't like the kid crushing his lap. You know, so who wants a giant, fat, heavy kid on their lap asking for a, what would he ask for? A drone and an iPod. iPad. Drone. Oh, my gosh. Too funny. Yeah, that visual. Okay, we're out of time. We'll be back on Friday. Have a great couple days. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Thank you.